Now from the KSFR Newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, August 13th. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is today calling for common-sense immigration reform that will aid New Mexico's agricultural industry and rural communities. His remarks reflect a recent White House report projecting that the elimination of immigrant labor in New Mexico could cause short-term agricultural production losses of between $32 and $57 million to the state's $2.2 billion industry. Further statistical analysis posits that fixing immigration issues here would increase total personal income for New Mexico families by $431 million by the year 2020. The Forest Service has identified 9 projects eligible to receive up to $3.2 million in federal grant money through New Mexico's Collaborative Forest Restoration Program. The projects all promote healthy watersheds, reduce the threat of wildfires, and improve the functioning of forest ecosystems by reducing the number and density of small diameter trees. Of local note is a $360,000 post-fire restoration of lands in Santa Clara Canyon. The grants are authorized under the Community Forest Restoration Act, introduced by former Senator Jeff Bingaman and signed into law back in 2000. New teacher evaluation standards for Santa Fe Public Schools have been green-lighted by the State Public Education Department. School Superintendent Joel Boyd says the new evaluation system will have a positive effect, and State Education Secretary-designate Hannah Scandera also lauds the plan for mirroring standards established statewide. Critics have complained the standards place too great an emphasis on student scores on standardized tests. That component accounts for 35% of a teacher's evaluation. Another 25% will be based on 3 in-class observations made during the school year. A move to promote urban agriculture in Santa Fe has been approved by the city's Public Works and Land Use Committee. The resolution would have the city collaborate with local nonprofit organizations to create farm stands, which would sell fresh produce from community gardens and orchards. The matter is headed to full city council at the end of the month and has already received support from the Sustainable Santa Fe Commission and the Food Policy Council. 2 Santa Fe police officers have completed their standard 3 days of paid administrative leave following last Friday's officer-involved shooting. The officers were attempting to pull over a stolen vehicle when suspect Roberto Mendez rammed a police unit and attempted to run the officers over. Mendez was shot in the cheek. It's still unclear which officer wounded the unarmed Mendez and how many shots were fired. Both the Santa Fe Police Department and State Police are investigating. A heads up to Santa Fe area motorists today, as a water main line break along St. Francis Drive is causing major disruption to traffic. The break occurred as city crews were performing upgrade work at the San Mateo-St. Francis intersection. 2 southbound lanes are said to be closed, along with a single northbound lane. The city says it hopes to effect repairs as soon as possible, but advises motorists to instead use alternate routes, such as Old Pecos Trail, Cerrillos Road, or St. Michael's Drive. New Mexico's and the nation's first human case of plague this year has been confirmed by the State Department of Health. A 15-year-old boy from Torrance County is currently hospitalized in stable condition. Plague is a bacterial disease of rodents and is generally transmitted to humans through the bites of infected fleas, but can also be transmitted by direct contact with infected animals, including wildlife and pets. Symptoms include sudden onset of fever, chills, headache, and weakness, and, in most cases, painful swelling of lymph nodes. With the start of school tomorrow in Santa Fe, local police will be out in strength monitoring school zones. Police will be using radar speed guns, bike patrol officers, and the speed vans to catch speeding or aggressive drivers, and those not wearing seat belts, as well as individuals not using the proper drop-off locations. Fines handed out in school zones are double the normal amount. A zero-tolerance policy will be in effect with no warnings issued. And weather for Santa Fe. Mostly sunny today and Wednesday with highs around 80 degrees. There's a 20% chance for afternoon showers today, increasing to 30% both tonight and tomorrow. Overnight lows in the mid-50s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 76 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe. Your child's curiosity about the existence of God, the meaning of life, and good and evil should be nurtured and respected. At the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe, both child and curiosity are honored. Learn more at uusantafe.org.
At Noon on KSFR now segues to today's feature stories. Santa Fe Community College has just hosted an important conference on technology transfer. Randy Grissom is the Vice President for Academic Affairs, and he moderated the meeting. Randy joins us now. Randy, tell us about this conference.
Yes, we sponsored a technology transfer conference that's designed to really focus on New Mexico's future and economic development with Senator Tom Udall's office, co-sponsored by the Regional Development Corporation and Technology Ventures Corporation, along with Santa Fe Community College. And it was really a kickoff to some legislation that Senator Udall will be introducing to really try to enhance and expand the efforts to transfer technology to businesses to help them develop economically and be competitive.
Did anything about the event surprise you?
Well, I think the most surprising thing was the amount of energy in the room. There were a lot of people who felt that things have been much better over the past 6 to 10 years than they were when the whole tech transfer initiative started back in the 80s and early 90s. But yet we still got a long ways to go. It's still very cumbersome for small businesses, especially, to deal with federal labs. And we're just trying to figure out a way to make that easier for everybody. It's not necessarily the lab's fault that it's hard to deal with them. And there may be some things that through this legislation, the senator and if Congress can pass it, may make it easier for labs and other government-funded technology research to help businesses.
You mentioned the pending legislation. What are the specifics of that?
Well, I do know there's a couple of things. One is it's going to authorize the Secretary of Energy to create a new department within the Department of Energy. It's called the Office of Advanced Research, Tech Transfer, and Innovation in Energy. Stands for ARTIE, A-R-T-T-I-E. And that's going to really give a focal point and make sure that we're doing it. We talked yesterday in the conference, there's always been the science side, and then there's been the business side in the Department of Energy. And this is going to be an effort to kind of bring those two together the way I understand it. Another aspect is to create an Entrepreneurs in Energy Corps. It's called the E2 Corps. It's going to be modeled after the National Science Foundation's Innovation Corps. And that's going to support investments from the Department of Energy with entrepreneurs, mentors, scientists, and engineers. And so it's kind of bringing the resources together to help, and maybe including financial resources and U.S. AID for economic development projects around the country. So, I think that it's really taking some things that we've already seen work in other areas, see if we can't apply them to the tech transfer arena, and expanding on some of the things that we have at least seen have some glimmers that they're working.
The fact that the conference was held here at Santa Fe Community College, that speaks well to the institution, does it not?
It does. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think that we're on the cutting edge of a lot of workforce training, including the fact that, most people have thought community colleges don't do research. Well, our students and our faculty, especially here at SFCC, are involved in applied research. It's really helping them become more and better educated, and it's giving them some real hands-on experience before they go out in the real world for our students. But I think also our location, halfway between Santa Fe and Sandia and Albuquerque with Sandia and Los Alamos with the Los Alamos National Lab really, really helped too. But I think it surprised everyone. I think we had almost 200 people here.
Do you envision more research being done here?
Yes. In fact, we have been working quite a bit with Los Alamos over the last few years. We're about to form some relationships with the New Mexico Consortium, which is based in Los Alamos and includes New Mexico State and UNM, and on the algae projects. And so, we have one of the biggest algae programs, especially at a community college in the country. So we think that our students will be involved more of that. We're bringing contracts in. Even businesses are coming to us now and asking us to use our classes and our students to either do research for them or even to test their equipment, and our students get the hands-on educational experience.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
There is a role for community colleges in this whole tech transfer initiative. We certainly train the workforce and the technicians that will be working in the businesses that do transfer the technology. And so, you know, I think the fact that Santa Fe Community College got that recognition is important. This is a big partnership approach, and we think New Mexico can be the pilot project for taking these tech transfer initiatives the next step.
Randy Grissom with Santa Fe Community College, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
16 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. New Mexico has had a medical cannabis program since it was signed into law by former Governor Bill Richardson in 2007. The program has been through the expected growing pains and necessary adaptations. Emily Kaltenbach is the New Mexico State Director for the Drug Policy Alliance and joins us now. Emily, New Mexico's medical cannabis program has been considered by some as a model program. Would you say that still holds true?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We were definitely looked at as a model. We were the first state to have a centralized state licensed program where the Department of Health oversaw licensing not only the producers but also the patients. And so it was a really tightly run program. I really believe that we still are a model for that. Compared to, you know, other states actually, in fact, adopted our model when they developed their programs. So most recently, even Massachusetts looking at how we ran our program here in New Mexico. So I still feel like we're a national model. We have about 12,000 patients in the program. That's small compared to some other state programs that have many more patients. And I think we always can enhance and improve the program, but we have a really robust list of qualifying conditions that patients can qualify for, and I think we're continuing to look at as a national model.
What are some areas that require more attention?
There are a few concerns. I mean, one is that, as we know, numbers of patients are going up since 2007, but since 2010, we haven't increased the number of licensed producers. And so patients are starting to report that there is a shortage of their medicine, since we don't have a number of producers that can meet that demand, nor the number of plants that those producers could grow. So I think it's really important for the Department of Health to take a look at supply versus demand and make sure that all of the patients who are qualified are able to access their medicine in a timely way. The other thing is I think there are a few other conditions that should be considered in the program that we've seen in other programs around the country and also evidence to support. One of those being traumatic brain injury. As you know, our program was one of few and basically the first program to allow PTSD to be a qualifying condition. And New Mexico, as we know, has a high number of veteran patients. So I think that we need to also consider traumatic brain injury, perhaps Parkinson's disease, and some other neurological diseases that are just incredibly terrible diseases that people suffer from, and we know that medical cannabis could be a great therapy.
The issue of the shortage of the drug seems to be a regular problem. How can that be remedied?
The Department of Health has to actually open up the licensing process to allow more producers. And at this point, Department of Health is not allowing any additional licenses. So that rests at the Department of Health to make that decision, to decide whether they'll accept applications and actually evaluate and license new producers.
Two states have legalized marijuana. Does that impact the medical cannabis programs in those states?
So those really exciting that Washington and Colorado are moving forward with a tax and regulate system for marijuana. Those states are in the process of developing their systems, so we have a lot to learn and see how they're going to impact medical marijuana. I just want to indicate that we really should look at the momentous shift in our population's attitude towards marijuana. For the first time ever, over 50% of Americans support taxing and regulating marijuana. The number for medical marijuana is extremely high. It's up 70 to 80% of Americans believe in medical marijuana. I think we should look at Dr. Sanjay Gupta's most recent piece on CNN on Sunday night, which was incredible, where he publicly apologized for misleading the American public on the harms of medical marijuana. He's completely come around and has looked at the research and has said publicly medical marijuana is beneficial as a therapy, as a medicine. And so I think we're just seeing a shift. Now over 20 states have medical marijuana programs. I just think that our attitudes towards marijuana is really shifting in the country.
Anything else you want us to know?
It's important that the Department of Health tightly regulates the program. I think we've seen them do that job. We want to see them continue to regulate the program into the future. And we hope that they'll consider looking at the supply and demand issue, which I think will increasingly become a problem as more patients enter the program.
Emily Kaltenbach from the Drug Policy Alliance, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, putting more resources into renewable energy. PNM has built 5 new solar plants since 2011 and is building 2 new solar centers this year. PNM now produces enough solar to power over 13,000 homes and enough wind to power 94,000 homes. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
Currently 77 degrees in downtown Santa Fe at 12:20. Back-to-school time can be dangerous with youngsters, some for the first time, venturing out to school. There are some common-sense approaches that need to be taken by both parents and their children. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
Now that our kids will be returning to school, it's important that adults and children focus on the issues of safety when going to and from school. Doug Shoup of AAA New Mexico says that when it comes to driving, vigilance is the key.
This week, the kids are heading back to class, and every fall, more than 55 million children across the United States head back to school. 13% of those kids typically walk or ride their bike to classes. And that is why AAA New Mexico is warning drivers to be especially vigilant for pedestrians before and after school hours. Speed limits in school zones are reduced for a reason. Come to a complete stop.
Especially dangerous is the growing trend of distracted driving.
Taking your eyes off the road for just 2 seconds doubles your chances of being involved in a crash, so please do not text while driving. You want to eliminate those distractions as much as possible, especially, you know, when you're on your way to work. Don't be eating. Don't be changing the radio station. Don't be on your phone. And know where all those school zones are. If you happen to be driving from home to work, you want to know where those school zones are so you're especially watchful in those areas. Make sure that you reverse responsibly. Every car has a blind spot. You want to check for children on the sidewalk, in the driveway, and around your vehicle before slowly backing out. Also, watch for bicycles. Children on bikes are often inexperienced, unsteady, and unpredictable. You want to slow down and allow at least 3 feet of passing distance between your vehicle and a cyclist.
Some students will be taking the bus for the first time, and parents need to teach them safety etiquette.
For kids that are riding the bus, remind your students to remain in their seats while the bus is in motion. Keep their heads and their arms inside the bus at all times, and be especially alert to traffic when getting on or off school buses.
Selena Westerfeld is with the Santa Fe Police Department and reminds us that traffic doesn't present the only danger.
We also want to just teach them about the dangers in the community. Always to make sure that they know who they're going home with, have a game plan if they do get lost. Riding buses can be kind of confusing for a new kid, especially at a brand new school. So always have a plan B when it comes to safety within your home, and teach your kids that not everybody is there and not everybody is always the nicest person in the whole world. They need to have a little bit of stranger danger at times.
Another hazard, and one which a child may never have dealt with before, is the presence of alcohol and other drugs. this being a particularly dangerous problem is one that should be discussed between parents and their children.
And that's just another open conversation that you want to have with your children, especially as they grow up. Not everybody is always the best influence on their kids. And to make sure that you tell them, if you see these things at school, go tell a teacher so that the teacher can go tell the principal and the principal can call police. They don't even have to do it. If they're worried about hurting their friend's feelings or whatnot, tell them to take the teacher aside, talk to them quietly, and that the teacher won't tell anyone. So you just kind of have to make sure that your kids aren't afraid to be responsible and do the right thing.
We're fortunate to live in a relatively safe city. It's up to all of us to make sure that continues.
Tennessee is a pretty close-knit community. You'd hate to say that we are not susceptible to that, but we haven't seen any instances of that last year, and, you know, thank goodness we didn't see any of that this summer. So just make sure that your kids have a safety plan. They know their route. They're checking in with you. You can never be too cautious.
Doug Shoup with AAA New Mexico and Selena Westerfeld with the Santa Fe Police Department. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
KSFR is supported by the City of Santa Fe and is proud to air the full live Santa Fe City Council meetings beginning at 5 p.m. on the second and last Wednesday of every month from the City Council Chambers at 200 Lincoln Avenue. Agendas and packets for City Council meetings are available on the Friday prior to each City Council meeting on their website, santafenm.gov. To get on the City Council agenda, contact the City Clerk at 955-6521.
1227 here in the KSFR Newsroom. As we approach the bottom of the hour, it is our custom to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
It really didn't come as a surprise to me, but somehow it did, kind of like an expected death that inexplicably becomes unexpected. Not that I intended to get morbid. I was watching TV, scanning channels, and landed on a show I had never seen, a game show called The American Bible Challenge. My first thought, why didn't I think of that? I could have made millions. Of course, I would have tithed, assuring myself forgiveness. Money seems to do that. The three teams, you know, in some countries I could be shot for what I just said, the three teams competing in the American Bible Challenge were the Anointed Ink, the Preachin' Divas, and the Sisters, who were nuns. One of the nuns said, "Sometimes God's calling you to play volleyball." With all due respect, sister, no, God isn't calling you to play volleyball. God's calling you to play ball.
Play ball!
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk. With many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.